Good evening and welcome to today's date, the 5th of November, Morro Bay City Planning Commission meeting. And I'd like to confirm that we have a quorum, but we are missing Commissioner Ingraffia tonight, who called and said he couldn't make it. I would like to start the meeting with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So tonight we're going to, the agenda said a few things about public comment, but I would like to make as much public comment available as possible to the public tonight. And it isn't really a super special meeting. It says special meeting on the agenda, but it's actually just a delayed meeting because yesterday was the voting day, and so this hall was full. So right now I'd like to open the microphone for public comment for items which are not on tonight's agenda. If there's anybody in the audience that would like to speak on a subject we're not discussing, now would be that time. You're welcome to speak.
There's so many good things going on in Morro Bay, right? I'm Margaret Carmen, and I'd like to speak about, I was rushing from San Luis Obispo to get here, so what do we call what we're looking at tonight? The plan,
the general plan.
General plan, yay, okay. I would like to ask that we have some standards and some rules put in the general plan about the bluffs, the top, because it felt like they weren't in the document. And talking about putting something in the middle between a historic preservation ordinance, and I know we're always talking about not having $50,000 worth of consultants. And so there was a lady that helped with Morro Elementary, Paula Carr. And so just putting an idea out, maybe you could talk to her and just get some ideas about what we could do about a historic preservation ordinance for down in the general plan. And now I forgot what I was supposed to say. I wanted to say about the fishing, because we want those to be taken care of, the parking and commercial fishermen and whatever you can do to take care of them down at the Embarcadero, I'm for it. Right? Okay, that's all. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you. Anybody else? AGP, do we have any raised hands online?
Hi, Chair Myers. We have one person online, but no raised hands.
Okay, thank you. So we'll close public comment on items not on the agenda and move forward to our only item, which is an item number which I can't find right now. 3A, I believe.
That's correct. Good evening, Chair Meyer and Commissioners. I'm Erlen Singwald, your Community Development Director. And we have all of our city planning staff here tonight. We have Susanna Toner, Senior Planner, Lee Ackerman, our Assistant Planner, and Eric Valentine, our Associate Planner. So the staff report has been a team effort, and we are going to share the presentation this evening. But first, I just want to kind of set the stage for the discussion. So we are here this evening to discuss the city's general plan and specifically our progress in 2024 implementing the general plan. I think most of us have a pretty good understanding of what the general plan is, but since the whole focus of this item is the general plan, I just wanted to step back a second and reflect on the importance of the general plan. So the general plan is the city's overarching land use policy document. It's the blueprint for the city of Morro Bay's future. Every city planning document and really every city action related to land use has to be consistent with the general plan. So it's a very important document. We implement the general plan on a daily basis as city staff. The general plan progress report, however, really highlights the major accomplishments over the reporting period for the progress report. So it doesn't encapsulate every single project that was reviewed and processed during the reporting period. Just highlights the major accomplishments and the status of various implementation actions. So why are we presenting this report tonight to the Planning Commission? So three reasons. First, it's legally required. Technically, what the law says is that we have to present this report to the City Council, the legislative body of the jurisdiction. However, just in the interest of transparency and having a dialogue with the Planning Commission and the public, we also present it first to the Planning Commission. The second reason is transparency and accountability. This is an opportunity just to check in with the Commission. I mean, you are the City Council's official land use advisory body, and to check in with the public on our status of implementing the general plan. In addition, as I've mentioned at past commission meetings, we've heard from commissioners about ideas of additional implementations or zoning code amendments. This is really probably the most appropriate forum that we'll have each year to discuss those possible zoning code amendments that you would like us to suggest to the City Council. This isn't a forum really to discuss amending the general plan. It's really just a status report on the general plan and additional implementations that you would like to suggest. But it's really not the right forum to talk about, you know, certain policies or programs that you believe should be deleted from the general plan. I also want to speak a moment about the reporting period. So the reporting period for this progress report is 2024. I recognize for staff, and I'm sure also for the commission and public, it creates a bit of a sense of dissonance. I think it's human nature to want to focus on, you know, what we're doing now and what's more current, not have to think back to a year, 2 years in the past. So just, you know, to that point, moving forward, we are going to begin presenting this report to the commission and the council in the springtime. So for the 2025 General Plan Progress Report will present to Planning Commission probably in March of 2026, and then City Council around April of 2026. We did present most of the same content that we're presenting tonight. We actually presented in March of this year. I framed it as our Community Development Department Priorities Report, where we presented on, you know, planning permit stats, building permit stats, progress on long-range planning projects. We discussed all of that in March of this year, but we didn't bring the full report for the Planning Commission to recommend to Council, so that's why we're bringing it now, because it's due to the state before the end of the year. So that concludes my opening remarks, and I'm gonna turn it over to Lee Ackerman to give a presentation on the annual progress report for 2024.
Thanks, Erlyn. So Erlyn covered the background of the general plan and the general plan annual progress report pretty well. But just to reiterate, this is for reporting year 2024. And we are bringing it to you tonight for review, and then we will bring it to City Council for approval. And once approved, we will bring it to, or we will send it to the state by the end of the year. So some highlights from 2024 include the certification of our comprehensive zoning code update by the California Coastal Commission, which happened in March of 2024. We also applied to the Coastal Commission for a grant of $750,000 to update our 1996 waterfront master plan, which is now underway and is scheduled to be completed by November 2026. Other grant opportunities were pursued across all city departments. Some of these include the Harbor Department securing funding for slip repairs, as well as Recreation Services working with Mora Bay Seniors to secure funding for the annual Tunes at Tidelands music performances. The Planning Commission reviewed a total of six projects in 2024. Some of these include the Quonset Hut Hotel on Main Street, which is now under construction, as well as a new three-lot subdivision on Ridgeway, which included the relocation of a historic building on the same site, and the redevelopment of Bayside Landing on the south end of the Embarcadero. On the staff level, the Planning Division issued a total of 37 administrative coastal development permits. We saw an influx of new build ADUs as well as ADU conversions and junior ADUs, as well as a handful of new build single family homes and demo rebuilds of single-family homes. There were no new commercial builds, but there was a few commercial additions and alterations. The building division also issued its highest annual number of building permits in 2024. I believe that was the highest annual number within at least the past 5 years. This totaled over 500 residential building permits with valuations totaling nearly $16 million. I should note that of those 500 building permits, only 34 of them are new build residential units, 15 of which are single family homes, and 19 of which are accessory dwelling units. This table shows the regional housing needs allocation progress for the city as of 2024. The regional housing needs allocation, also known as RENA, is mandated by the state and quantifies the amount of housing a jurisdiction needs to build in a given cycle. The San Luis Obispo region is in its sixth cycle, which runs from 2018 to 2028. So 2024 marks 5 years into the cycle. And as you can see on the table, we are 50% complete with our moderate income level housing and nearly 68% complete with our above moderate, but we are falling behind in our very low and low income level housing. So our recommendation for you tonight is to review and recommend that the City Council accept the General Plan Annual Progress Report and to give input on any additional general plan implementations for council consideration. Thanks.
Mr. Chair, so we are going to pause for commission questions on this section of the presentation and public comment before we move on to the second part of the presentation, which is focused just on the historic preservation ordinance.
There we go. Mary. They're persnickety. You have to push hard. There you go.
All right. I had two questions. The first was, did we get any feedback last year after we submitted?
Yeah, that's a good question. As I was preparing for my presentation this evening, I was actually reflecting on that exact same question because in my time as a planner working on progress reports, we submit it to the state by the deadline and never hear a word back. I think they acknowledge the receipt, but that's about it. They rarely have comments.
Okay, and then on that note, other than kind of just completing a paperwork drill, I was wondering, is there anywhere where we're seeking feedback or support from the office for what we send? Like, is there anything that we might possibly try to get out of this activity?
As far as from the state, I would say no. Really, the purpose of this is just to report to the state, and the state also, I believe, will publish our report on a state website. It's all about transparency, just making sure that jurisdictions are having continual conversations with their decision makers and the public about the status of the general plan. So it's really just getting the information out there.
Tony? John? I have a question for Lee. I mean, perhaps you have the answer, I'm not certain. With respect to RENA, typically jurisdictions are always behind the eight ball on RENA in my experience. And I just was curious if you had any information about the surrounding cities in our county and how they performed against the standard. In other words, they might be 50% or 30%. How does Morro Bay rank, let's say, just wildly?
Okay, they are persnickety tonight. I am in a monthly meeting with other jurisdictions around the county to talk about housing. Recently, we did discuss all of our RENA numbers, and I believe Morro Bay was not last. we were, I think, Pismo and Arroyo Grande both are more behind on their RENA numbers, although I will note that Arroyo Grande, they have completed their low and very low income RENA requirements.
And I'm I'm assuming I'm correct in what I'm going to say, but RENA is a standard by which the state sets that we should be zoning property going forward for certain economic classes or certain zoning types. And we're not required to actually build those units. We're just required to zone for those units. Is that the correct understanding? The city isn't, we can't force the developers to build, but we can create the land for the zoned land for them to build on. So there's no, is there, there's no penalty per se to the jurisdiction for not meeting the numbers, or is there?
So I'll go ahead and start off, and Susanna may want to add to my response, but you explained the process correctly. So when we update our housing element, which we're required to do every 8 years, we get a number. The state gives a number for the entire county to SLOCOG, the Council of Governments, and they divide that number up among the 8 jurisdictions in the city and in the county. And then in our housing element, we have to show that we have enough areas that are zoned to be able to produce that number of housing units. As far as the penalty for not actually seeing that number realized during the housing element planning period, there are some penalties. For example, jurisdictions that are behind in their RENA targets could trigger certain state laws that allow for streamlined housing development. Also, it could affect a jurisdiction's competitiveness for certain housing grants from HCD. So there are some penalties.
Okay. And was now the time you wanted to go to public comment on this? Or yes.
Oh, yeah, hold on. Okay. Could you tell me what RENA stands for, just being the newest person on board?
Regional Housing Needs Allocation.
And who are they?
So it's generally, it's managed by, it's basically a quantity of housing units that, as Erlyn said, it's split by the region. So it depends on our, I believe, our population, other
Yeah, the state gives the numbers to our local COG, the Council of Governments, and the Council of Governments looks at the transportation needs and across the county and the population centers, where the jobs are, where the houses are, and they allocate a certain number of housing units to each jurisdiction based on where the jobs are and where the houses are, trying to balance that out.
Yeah, so it's not an entity, but
okay.
Quality, yeah.
Thanks.
So did we want to go to public comment now, Erlyn, or how are you going to proceed?
Well, if there's no more questions from the Planning Commission, then yes, go to public comment.
And just for the sake of the public, we're going to have two different opportunities to speak tonight on this. The first opportunity is on the general plan review in general, and the second opportunity will be specifically on the historic preservation ordinance that we're discussing. So if you want to talk, if you have a lot to say, you have two opportunities. Otherwise, you're welcome to say everything in one if you would like, but you're limited to 3 minutes. But I'll open it up to public comment for anyone who would like to speak. There'll be a second opportunity as we go to the historic ordinance later.
Okay. Good evening, distinguished commissioners, city staff. Shirley Frazier, Morro Bay resident. I'm speaking to something that is with regard to the general plan and our updated zoning code. Others have mentioned it in letters to you guys for this meeting, and you heard Margaret speak about it, which is with regard to the lack of the bluff, or referred to in some cases as the bluff top development standards that are no longer in our zoning code or our master plan. They've been a part of the Beach Street specific plan for at least 30 years, if not more. I've been here 30 years, and they were here when I moved here. And apparently, they were inadvertently omitted from the plan. And they were actually supposed to be melded into that the original code, and I know Eric knows probably about this as he's nodding, but the two different factors with all of the waterfront master plan and the Beach Street specific and everything was supposed to be melded into one. So there were no gotcha things for it, to not approve on one hand but on another. In fact, in all the documents that I have seen in going back, I don't see where that specific area was redlined out or slated, highlighted, whatever, for any kind of omission or removal. The people that I've spoken with that were involved in the approval process for that, whether that be commissioners or council members, they felt like that definitely would have been an issue slated for discussion because there were other significant issues that were brought up for discussion that were being removed, and that was not one that we can find any data on at this point. With that, and many of those were discussed with the city staff at that time, which I know wasn't any of you, and the consultant that worked on that. With the lack of that bluff development standards being omitted, the requirements for any building heights or setbacks, with that being removed, that basically means that anything that would be developed down below us here, and in fact, not just a new development, but it could essentially be a remodel situation, could severely impede the beautiful view shed that we have for the public currently. So this kind of plays to what we're doing tonight with the master plan on an update. It also kind of parallels with the waterfront master plan update because the money is there for that. It's going to involve the public in a process for public comment, and also we'll have to go to the Coastal Commission for approval. So my hope is by bringing this to the light to you guys that something can be done at this point to be brought to you guys, the council, to have this put back in. I would implore your serious consideration, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Oh, it's not going to beep again. Thank you. And I do have the information. I know they have it, but I do have a lot of specific information with regard to this. If it would be helpful, I offer it to anyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else with comments on tonight's?
Good evening, committee members and Morro Bay fellow residents. My name is Hope Patalino, and I'm here representing the Central Coast Women for Fish. I'd like to address the proposed language in the implementation table, pages 15 and 16, items LU 8 through 11. LU 8, well, first of all, we really need to add more designated parking for commercial fishermen in the Measure D zone. Right now, I'd suggest two spots at the bottom of Beach Street by Stack's Wine Bar, and three by the slips north of Beach near where the Britta Michael is tied up. In summer especially, it is almost impossible to find close parking. And these guys are hauling heavy gear to and from their boats, and many of these guys are not spring chickens, no names, but it's tough, and it's not right that they have to park blocks away. So this issue has been brought up to the Harbor Commission more than once, but so far nothing's been done. Let's fix that. I'm also concerned about regular dock maintenance and reliable power. Those are basic necessities for safety and for keeping the harbor working. Now, about the part of the general plan that talks about, quote, updating the fishing community's sustainability plan every 5 years. Fishing sustainability. What is that exactly? What does that even mean? Now, it's not the city's role. The city's job is to make sure the infrastructure, the docks, slips, power, all of that is safe and in good shape. That's what should be evaluated. This kind of sustainability language has been weaponized elsewhere to the demise of commercial fishing villages. Once it gets embedded in the master plan, future changes in harbor zoning, dock usage, permissible gear, et cetera, may be justified in the name of sustainability, potentially to the detriment of our fishermen. My husband and I actually saw this happen in the Outer Banks in North Carolina. 30 years ago, we lived in Hatteras, where our neighbors' families had been born from fishermen for 200 years, 200 years of that legacy. Now that commercial fishing community in 2025 is virtually gone, replaced by three-story Airbnbs. And as I said, I'm a member of the Central Coast Women for Fish. But here's the thing. I don't know how to fish. I get seasick in a hot tub. I don't know a halibut from a hat rack. So what do I care? Why am I here? Well, I'm here And we moved here for the same reasons many of you here tonight did, I would think. Not just for the stunning rock views, but for the authentic sight of fishing boats unloading at dawn. Our working fishing fleet is the heartbeat that sets Morro Bay apart from every other Central Coast town. Please, please, let's honor them and understand they help our economy. They bring in the tourisms, the tourists, and they bring in people moving here. And they are to be cherished, and please help them help us. Thank you.
Thank you. Next up.
Yeah, good evening, Finance Committee, City Staff. My name's Jeremiah O'Brien, and I'm Vice President of the Morro Bay Commercial Fishermen's Organization. And we didn't really have a whole lot to bring to the table tonight, but thank you very much, Hope, for the wonderful presentation. And first thing she mentioned was the parking. And you know, we've been talking about that for 40 years that I can recall, 45 probably. And we're looking for a couple of set aside parking spots. One down, all the way down, past just by the launch ramp there, and another down by Beach Street, and perhaps another down towards Tognazzini's area or by the Great American Fish Company. But anyways, two or three spots on the whole waterfront, I don't think is asking too much. For some reason, the city seems to have been, or the harbor seems to have been very resistant to that over the years. But anyway, also, I passed around a paper for everybody here, and how this even came up to bring this here tonight is I had given Erlen a copy of a recent, it's kind of ironic, copy of a fairly recent regulation that was passed on to us, and it outlined the things that we are required to do in order to participate. And there is no way that a fisherman could catch those fish the way that was required and make any money whatsoever. And fishermen are in the business to make money. You don't make money, you don't work. I mean, it's simple as that, like any other business. So finally, it was recognized in DC, and that's what I gave out to all of you, that they're reviewing that now. So any of the down turns the fishing industry ahead financially, hopefully, when this begins, it's just starting now, and we are, the Morro Bay Fishermen's Organization is answering to this, as are many other organizations up the coast, but hopefully the things might turn around a little bit here on the waterfront. So that's the reason I brought those up. Is there any questions?
Was there something you were hoping that we would be doing with respect to this, or was it just information?
Well, that was just the information, that part of it, that was just the information for
okay, great.
Our financial, in the waterfront plan, I believe it mentions the stability of the industry. I think I could quote it here, but it was questioning the stability fishing industry. And this was
a rebuttal of sorts.
Somewhat, yeah. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have anybody else who'd like to speak on tonight's item?
Commissioners, Tom Hafer. I'm a commercial fisherman out here at the Catherine H. Thank you, Hope, for what you said. I was gonna go over a little bit of that, but you covered it. The parking places would be nice. Maybe one by Stacks, maybe two by the Bird of Michelle, Billy Blue's boat. And then maybe one over there by Gafco or something. But, you know, we were promised that a long time ago. We never really got it. We never, you know, I don't know why it never happened. But that would be good because there's in the summer, even in the, you know, in the spring, a lot of people from the valley come here and there's nowhere to park. So you guys know that. And, you know, we have Measure D in Morro Bay, which is recreational and commercial fishing from Beach Street all the way up past the plant, you know, that where they sucked in the water for the cooling. I think it even goes farther than that, but we have that, and it was voted on, and we think it should stay that way. I don't think we should just change Measure D because some people in this town want to change it. It's for commercial and recreational fishing, and you know the dock, Garrett's unloading dock, Mark's unloading dock at Togazzini's Wharf. So I mean that's really important to us, and we don't want to see, you know, wind companies especially come in here and take over the North Tee Pier because we've heard that's what's going to happen. It could happen. And we were just at a meeting on Monday with this guy talking about how wind infrastructure would affect commercial fishing in Morro Bay, and it would affect it a lot. You know, our fuel, we have a small field, the Garamores, I think he only holds 20,000 gallons. They're bringing in those big SUV boats, 300 footers, tying to the North Tee Pier. That's not a good thing. They have thrusters all around them. It's bad for the otters, bad for the eelgrass. It's just bad for Morro Bay. And, you know, the whole thing about the wind, it should never happen off of here. It's just a ridiculous idea, and it'll never work. So just so you know, Measure D, we want to stand strong, and it should never be changed, you know? Thank you.
Thank you. Do we? Yes.
It's always frightening for me to come up here, and I didn't prepare to say anything about this, but I had a little vision. I grew up in Morro Bay. I just had a little vision while these people were giving their talks about just everything that our city is about, and fishing is a number one. I mean, everything about it. And I had this vision of all yachts. I love yachts. Oh gosh, they're beautiful. But I thought, all these yachts replacing the fishing boats, and it wouldn't be the same for tourists. It wouldn't be the same for native Morro Bayans. The impact that fishing has had on Morro Bay is just so great and comforting. And we designate parking spaces for VIP. Our fishermen are VIP. And it might sound like a small thing to ask for a general plan, but let's give them their parking spaces. Let's make their life easier. It's kind of hard being out there on the ocean sometimes. And yeah, I think this is something we can do for them, and I think we can preserve our small harbor. I don't know if any of you have read through the Boehm report regarding just exactly what happens to harbors that are used as maintenance ports for offshore wind farms, but there's talk about excavating sand spits. There's talk about the sizes of the ships. And when you read that report and what could possibly happen to our little harbor, you don't want to let anything go forward at all. So I would just hope that you hold on to Measure D and you honor our fishermen. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Bill Blue. And I'm concerned about the parking. I've been a commercial fisherman here for 51 years. I don't live in Morro Bay anymore. I live in Templeton now. I moved there 11 years ago. I won't even come over here on the weekend to try and work on my boat. I can't get anywhere near it, you know. So it would be really nice if you could honor the parking request. That's instrumental. And the Measure D. We're not asking for more. We're just asking to hold on to what we have. The fishing industry is more sustainable as far as a resource status is concerned. Our fear of sustainability is being regulated out of business. It doesn't have anything to do with the ocean not being healthy. It's as healthy as it's ever been. And that's about it. We've been here a long time. The industry's changed. It's not like it used to be, but there's still a lot of people here. If you want to see what's going on, you could go down to the dock behind Dockside and watch what goes on during the course of the day. The fleet has changed. There's a lot of smaller boats, but it's a very viable industry, and it should be protected. It's part of the heritage of this town. Thank you.
Thank you.
Before I make my comment, Betty Winholtz, I just want to say affirmative to all that the fishermen have said, fisherwomen. And even though that may not be part of the general plan, that's certainly a recommendation that you can pass on to the city council and make happen. And then with regard to the bluff top standards, I think I sent you an email about that. I think that that's a critical thing that immediately needs to be put back in, and that's part of a package that you can send to Coastal to do that. The other thing that I want to mention is that's my last email, that we talk about circulation, and I mentioned that if you really wanted to deal with pedestrian and bicycle enhancement, because we seem to be going to this all modality thing instead of just using our money for cars and fixing our streets, that the distance between Radcliffe and Taco Bell is dangerous for pedestrians. There is a bike lane there. It may not be standard, but that's been like that forever, and it really needs to be. So if you need a project, and I think I mentioned it under one of the land use issues or circulation issues, the other one is down in South Morro Bay, where I live, where there has been a bike trail. They actually called it a bike trail when they put it in, but it's mostly pedestrian between Olive and down to Shasta as you go towards the state park. And that was made out of asphalt, so it looks like this now. It's not, you know, for a bike. In fact, when they first put it in, the bicyclist said, we have to go by 17 different driveways up and down, so we're not using that. So it's become very much of a very highly used pedestrian traffic. People walk from the campground up, and so it's very viable. I also wanted to mention real quickly about the elementary school, if that hasn't been mentioned, and that you are talking about the historic preservation ordinance, and my sense is that we don't know enough to do about that. And so I think to acknowledge that and say we want that, but maybe we need to do a little bit more work before we form a committee or say we're going to go mandatory or voluntary, I don't think you know how to choose that. And so I'm hoping that you'll maybe talk to this Paula Carr, who helped the elementary Friends of Morro Elementary get our historic status. So there are things to do as pre-steps before you jump into something more permanent. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to comment tonight? AGP, do we have any raised hands online?
Hi, Chair Beyer. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, closing public comment on that. Erlen, do you have any response to any of the comments from the public? Or
I do. So regarding Measure D, I want to be clear. Any change to Measure D would require voter approval, and there are no initiatives that I'm aware of to place a measure on the ballot to change Measure D, certainly nothing that our community development department or city staff are involved in. So I wanted to clarify that. Also, again, the main focus of tonight is implementation of the general plan. The primary implementation document affecting the waterfront and commercial fishing area is the waterfront master plan. And you know, thankfully, the city received a sizable grant from Coastal Commission to update that plan. We have a very active process currently happening. Tomorrow from at 3 p.m. in this room, the Waterfront Master Plan Advisory Committee will be meeting. We call it the WMPAC. The WMPAC's focus is going to be preparing for the November 18th Waterfront Master Plan Update Workshop. That workshop, we want to encourage as many people to attend as possible. We're going to have a lot of city staff there. We'll have the harbor director there. And we are there to have a dialogue with the community on these exact types of issues. I also want to point out regarding, you know, commercial fishing that our consultant is currently working on a market study for the waterfront area. And the market study does include some analysis of the commercial fishing industry, and that market study will be presented to the WMPAC on December 4th. So anyone who's interested in that should participate in that meeting. And then when we have our next workshop in early 2026, that market study will also be a main focus of that workshop. And those were the comments I had written down.
With respect to the bluff top standards?
Oh, right. Regarding the bluff top standards, so we're a new team. None of us here were involved closely with that zoning code update. We've talked with many community members about the bluff top situation and the fact that it was not carried forward in the comprehensive zoning code update. And we've done a lot of research on it. We could answer questions, but I think really the point is, looking forward, if we want to add that back in, it's a relatively simple process. It has to follow a process. It does have to go to Planning Commission and City Council and likely Coastal Commission for certification. But that's something that is absolutely within the Commission's purview to recommend that to the City Council. And if the Commission recommends that and the Council does initiate that amendment, we would include it in a zoning code cleanup that we plan to work on next year.
Okay. And then with respect to the discussions around pedestrianization along Main Street, that's just something we can chat amongst ourselves up here, I suppose, and same thing goes for the other public comments, if you feel those are something we should be pushing forward. So I think we have to deliberate now. So do you have any comments and thoughts of how you'd like to proceed? John, yeah, you gotta like hold it a little bit. I don't know.
Okay, you're better than I am. Thank you. I just have a question in regards to, you said the waterfront plan. So does that mean that we can't make any recommendations regarding parking right now? Because all I want to say is that I wanted to stand up and jump on this table. I heard this in 2006 when I was on the Planning Commission, 2008. And Jeremiah and Tom, I know you guys. I know Mr. French was a fisherman. They were like requesting, give me one spot, two spots, three spots. And I think from then to today, you might be like 20 years older than you were then. And you're still fishing. I see Tom out there all the time. So, I mean, if anything, to make that as a, I really recommend that we try to do this thing to help these guys at least with all the parking spots that we might not have in the summer. I think we can identify that. And I don't know if that's a conversation we can tell you to pass on.
Yes.
Or is that a conversation we can say we recommend?
So
it's appalling that we're talking about this 20 years later. I just can't believe it. I am just shocked. So I appreciate everything you're doing. Not alone, I don't think commercial fishermen is the only thing, because I have a boat and I go out and recreation fish, and we had a great salmon run a while ago. They opened up salmon season, and I'm sorry to say that, but we killed a lot of them. And it was a great weekend for 2-3 days. And the economy in this town just boomed like crazy. Not just people trying to go out fishing, just people trying to find a place to park to go out fishing. It was a great weekend that that took place 3-4 days. Too bad it didn't happen, open up again for later on again for another salmon fishing. But I really strongly recommend that we do something to help these guys, at least after 20-some years of them, excuse my language, bitching about it. Thank you.
I think it's what was being mentioned was three specific areas, and I would support that also, down at the ramp and in front of Stacks or at the bottom of Beach Street, and then over either by a Gavco or a little bit further out.
By the trash cans.
That's to be, I would just let you guys in Public Works figure that out, but I think we can recommend, you know, I think we concur, and I think I heard a third and probably a fourth that we would suggest, and we are suggesting to carry that forward to council as one of the recommendations that we would have going forward. Any other comments on?
I had a question on process for you, Eric, of whether we should. Are you considering that the historic ordinance discussion is a second separate item?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
In terms of the general plan progress report, I would, right now my head is at, you know, recommending that the city council receive and file, as well as highlighting, asking the department to highlight the bluff top and fishing spots with a recommendation from the Planning Commission that those are addressed in an upcoming meeting.
Tony, do you have any further add to that? I don't think I'm quite ready we're not ready to make a motion. We're actually gonna make a motion at the end of everything, including the historical ordinance, but noted.
I did have a question about the parking that's being requested. Are those standard parking stall sizes, or are you guys requesting that we absorb like four standard parking stall sizes to accommodate one? I mean, what's the request? Just a standard parking size stall? I mean, I'm 100% with these
guys. Why don't
guys
we have someone from your group come up to the mic and we can ask another question. It's also, I'll open back up public comment on this. Because I have a similar question. Is it a loading zone that we're looking for? It sounds like it's a loading zone more than a parking spot.
Well, it can be a, excuse me, a loading zone or just a parking spot. You know, the one at the boat ramp would be near the ramp itself, not the boat ramp, but the ramp that the guys take to get to their boats. The one at the bottom of Beach Street, where my boat is tied up, there's a spot next to Geo's spot that's has to stay open for trucks, but right next to that spot would be fine. So there'd basically be two spots there, but one isn't really a parking place. It's just where the forklift drives in and out. And then down by Billy's and Tagazzini's boat, two there, normal size, by the two trash cans that are there. That's where the guys like to park. There is a loading zone already in front of there, isn't there?
There is, yeah. But they kind of painted.
We because the public can't hear, for the sake of the video, we would need you to speak into the mic. I apologize.
We have a loading zone in front of the slips, but when they marked the curb off, they painted the red area, that what they painted red is where we would normally pull up to park so that the tailgate of our truck would open up to where the sidewalk dipped down for our dollies and stuff. And they have it the other way, which goes against the grain of the traffic. So if they could switch that, and it was the other way before, but when they repainted the curb, they kind of did it backwards from what works for us.
Okay.
And as Tom said, we don't want special parking places. Just we normally park by that dumpster there, and we'll come down in the summer times and there'll be a motorhome parked in there sideways, taking up all four spaces, and they stay there all day.
Yeah, so we need some sort of legal, that's why I was wondering about a loading zone where it could sort of legally be enforced as opposed to something where no one knows whose truck is what.
Yeah.
So that's not for us to decide tonight.
Right.
That's just to be worked out, but we'll recommend forward, it sounds
like.
Yeah,
if you guys
can
just push it forward
do.
To City Council, Harbor Advisory Board, we brought it up there before.
Yep.
So you've heard it.
Thank you.
Okay.
I just want to make a comment. I think you're just asking for a parking spot, not for a boat loading and unloading zone area, right? It's just to be able to park. And
but I don't know if, John, I don't know if we could put fisherman-only parking.
But that's a pretty tricky one to define.
So, yeah.
I mean,
so
we could put unloading, fishing unloading gear here, something, I don't know.
I don't want to be rude here, but we do have parking saying Harbor Department parking.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
fisherman parking.
I don't think we need to decide the terminology. Okay. I think the gist of this is understood. Otherwise, we might be here till the wee hours.
Thanks, John.
Thank you. Closing public comment again. Any other comments, John? And so then I think that the points that Betty's left already, but I tend to also agree that that section between Radcliffe and Taco Bell, which is Errol Street, has been unimproved my entire life, and that previous North Morro Bay, North Main Street specific plan, I think it was called, did discuss various improvements that never got made, even though that plan's from 40 years ago. And it is about time to put some effort there, because every high school kid that walks from downtown walks along that stretch, and it's the land between North Morro Bay and South Morro Bay. We should improve it somewhat. It's pretty scrappy right there, so I would like to recommend just, I guess, more emphasis be placed on that as an item on the list of 1,000 items, along with the earlier discussion about parking spots for the fishermen, as well as the bluff top guidelines. And I believe you also had a discussion that you had at a previous meeting about garages. There was an old guideline where garages were allowed to be in the setback if it was a certain slope, and that language already exists, but it wasn't carried forward into the new guidelines, and a project was brought forward to Planning Commission. Mind you, there was more, they wanted a lot more than just that, but had they had the old guidelines, they would have at least been able to not have, if they followed the old guidelines, it wouldn't have required coming to the Planning Commission as an exception, as a variance. And I think we'd like to encourage the streamlining of projects by re-including that or something like that from the discussions that Mary and I have had anyway. That seems like a logical addition, and I'm not certain why it was left out. I don't remember, I wasn't part of that earlier discussions as a planning commissioner with respect to the master plan, but it does seem like we should request council consider that if we all agree. Okay, so those are the items I can think of right this minute. Those, is that three parking, four, that the North Main Street, the Bluff Top, I've lost one. The Olive to Shasta is probably it's important too, but it's not as important, I would think, because it's not a major connector in town, but it is something. I would support that as well, if we're as long as we're making a list. John, do you have any feelings about that?
No,
good. Okay.
To clarify, so the second one was to support improvements to the section of Main between Olive and Shasta?
Correct.
Okay.
Olive and Shasta, and then Radcliffe.
And Errol and Radcliffe.
And Errol, and then the Bluff Top, and then the parking for these gentlemen. Yeah, Radcliffe to Taco Bell would be the first priority as far as those two Main Street improvements by a long shot. Okay, do we want to move forward to the historical?
Yes, absolutely. So now we'll turn it over to Eric Valentine for a presentation on the historic preservation ordinance.
Good evening, planning commissioners. Switching gears a little bit towards a potential historic preservation ordinance. I think to start us off, it would be beneficial to briefly discuss what regulations are currently in place as exist right now in the city. So through CEQA, any discretionary permit, like a coastal development permit, must be evaluated for impacts to potential historic resources. For example, the demolition or significant alteration of a building that's over 50 years old would require a historic resource evaluation. So this report evaluates that structure based on the state's four eligibility criteria for listing on the California Register of Historic Resources. This report can also outline mitigation measures if necessary to the project. So this is a great tool, but there are some failings with that. For example, when a project does not require a CDP or a coastal development permit or any other type of discretionary permit, or if, like when the minor addition or demolition of the structure would be less than 50%, that's what triggers a CDP for us. Or in another example, when a resource might be locally significant to us here in Morro Bay, but wouldn't meet the state's criteria. So to address this, Plan Morro Bay contains policies and implementation measures that direct the development of a historic preservation ordinance. Not all of these actions I'm about to go into happened in 2024. Some of them are more recent, but the city has, for one, developed a cultural resources overlay for the protection of archaeological resources, which is included in the state's definition of a historic resource. We've also, as staff, coordinated with the Historical Society of Morro Bay on a draft historic preservation ordinance. This was done back in November of 2020, so it's been some time now. And we've also evaluated options for a regulatory framework moving forward for historic resources. So quickly, here's a draft, or a brief summary of the draft ordinance that the Historical Society put together, again, back in 2020. So first, the draft ordinance creates the Historic Preservation Advisory Body, or HPAB, and establishes its composition and duties. It establishes local evaluation criteria for designating historic resources, and it directs the HPAB to conduct an inventory of potential historic resources around the city as well. It also creates a new permit type called a Certificate of Appropriateness, and associates with that special requirements for work on any designated historic site, structure, or resource. Additionally, it also outlines an economic hardship process for owners of these properties if necessary. So the Historic Society's draft ordinance is what we would call mostly voluntary, as only private property owners can apply to designate their property as historic. Voluntary ordinances do not always guarantee the protection of historic resources if the property in question, for example, has not been designated as a resource by its homeowner. On the other hand, a mandatory ordinance may bring unintended impacts to properties around the cities, around the city, like potential impacts to property values, new requirements that would make it more difficult to perform routine maintenance, and so on. So with all that being said, we right now are seeking input from the Planning Commission on a potential historic preservation ordinance. For example, does the Planning Commission support the general direction of the Historical Society's draft ordinance? Does the commission support a voluntary approach, recognizing it's not a guarantee to protect locally important historic resources through some alterations and additions eligible for state listing? And also just generally any other feedback is welcome as well as we start looking into this more. Thanks.
Do you have any questions for staff? Mary?
I had a question on, there was a line in there you guys said where the draft ordinance is at a point where it would benefit from the expert review and advice of a historic preservationist. I was interested in what specifically we were seeking advice on, because to me, $50,000 contract seems steep to approve without understanding the deliverable. Just thinking about if we hired a consultant at around $500 an hour, you know, 100 hours, that would get us 2 hours with that person for about a year. And I just didn't know whether we would need to commit to that large of a contract with where we're at so far.
So the thing is, we just don't know at this point what we don't know. We don't have, you know, staff who are experts in the area of historic preservation. I know that the individuals that contributed to the 2020 Historical Society's draft ordinance, they are very knowledgeable in many areas, but I don't believe they were professional experts. Again, they did a lot of great work, a lot of great research, but there's not that level of confidence that what they drafted would be legally defensible. So we would just need the advice of a professional expert before we were able to recommend that ordinance for adoption. It might not be $50,000. I have actually reached out to some historic preservationists to get a quote. I did receive an informal quote of $40,000 to walk the city through the development of a new historic preservation ordinance. So that's really all I have to say in response.
To tag along, does that amount include sort of the charrette process? Taking it through the public process, bringing the community together and asking the community involvement, etc.
That's correct. So that $40,000 quote I received, that's not just taking the Historical Society's ordinance and reviewing it. That would be assisting the city with developing a new ordinance.
Okay. Any other yes, John?
Eric, I have a question for you. You talked about 50-year buildings versus voluntary. So if I have a 52-year-old building, what do I have to do versus?
Yeah, so if you came to us with a permit application to demolish a 52-year-old building, while we don't have a local historic preservation ordinance, we do have CEQA, and CEQA requires that for structures that are over 50 years old, we ask for that historic resource evaluation to see if potentially it's a locally significant or a statewide significant structure.
And that would apply to the last project that we looked at on Main Street? Is that
yeah,
one of the reasons
so
that they did that? Exactly.
That structure, I believe, was built in the 30s, so we asked for an HRE.
Yeah.
The HRE pointed out that it was historic, but not a significant one to Morro Bay or to the state. And so,
and if it was historic and they considered it historic, what would the city require that developer to do?
Yeah, so if it was historic, the HRE would have outlined mitigation measures. For example, maybe not making the addition to the front of the house that's facing the street. And it's very likely in almost every case that we would support those mitigation measures before Planning Commission.
On the same note, would it not also then be eligible for future Mills Act type of contract, for which would essentially lower the annual property taxes as sort of an incentive?
Which is my next comment, none of these documents talk about potential incentives to developers.
So
we'll get to the comments. Sorry, we're still at the questions point.
Okay.
I want to get to the public before we but carry on, Eric. Sorry.
Yeah, so the draft ordinance that the Historic Society prepared does include potential incentives. The Mills Act is one of them. Some other ideas for incentives would be like relaxation of zoning code standards, potential building code standards, although that's more of a state thing rather than a local thing. But Mills Act is definitely a possibility.
I have a little more context to provide. An example of a historic resource evaluation that altered a project was the project that came before Planning Commission in 2024, 900 Ridgeway. That was a 3-lot subdivision when it was originally submitted to the city. The house and it's a historic house with a historic artist studio on the original lots, and they proposed to subdivide and relocate the house when it was originally proposed to the city before the historic resource evaluation was turned in. The house and the artist studio were going to be on separate lots of the newly created lots, and through the historic resource evaluation, it was recommended to keep those structures on the same lot, as well as provide a placard and potentially recommend to the state that it be registered as a historic resource.
Any other questions? Nope. Okay, I'd like to open it up for public comments on the historic ordinance. Anyone like to speak on that?
Hello again. My name's Judy Setting. Okay. I do get really nervous, so I'm just going to read what I have. So we currently have an historic property that is highly sought after by developers that may propose up to 500 housing units on it. The community is in favor of preserving the historic buildings and the sports field. The community, excuse me, the community may consider development of up to 100 homes on the northwest portion of the property. Am I correct in thinking that currently, under the new high-density housing regulations, a project could be approved based on this verbiage? The social and economic benefits of the project outweigh the significant impact on the historic resources. If that is true, could we not offer alternative city-owned property to meet social and economic benefit project being proposed? The California Office of Historic Preservation has put together a wonderful resource for creating an historic preservation ordinance. It's called Drafting Effective Historic Preservation Ordinances, and I found it on the parks.california.gov, so it's a state resource. And I looked over it. It's a very extensive PDF with lots of good guidelines on how to produce your own ordinance. And does it stand to reason that with this state resource, the city could negate the need for an expensive consultant? I am in favor of creating an historic ordinance, but at this time feel there is no need to rush or hire a consultant. There are fiscally sound alternatives. Morro Bay is unique for many reasons, one of them being it has a plethora of retired citizens, a lot. We're over 70% elderly, with an array of career experiences. Not everyone likes to let people know what they are. But for creating an historic preservation ordinance, let's go forward with a fiscally sound approach. Use the state resource and reach out to our citizens to create a draft. And then we can have our lawyer go over it. I think we have two lawyers now, don't we? Sort of. I know you can't answer me while I'm up here. But anyway, I think we can do it without spending $50,000. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else like to speak tonight? Okay, seeing none, AGP, do we have any raised hands online?
Hi, Chair Meyer. We have no raised hands in the queue.
Okay, great. Then I'll be closing public comment, and I'll bring it back to staff. Do you have any responses to the...
Yeah, just a quick response. That technical assistance bulletin that you found is awesome. That's what I relied on a lot in some of our resource. So I just want to say, you know, good job. We're looking at that too. And yeah, so we're aware of that. We're looking at it and, coordinating through it. So.
And I'll ask, as long as we're on that particular subject, the Historic Preservation Fund from the National Park Service. You guys, I presume, are familiar with that. That's what the city of SLO relied on for, I think, $25,000, $20,000, something like that, grant to do their historic resources ordinance a couple of years ago. Or maybe it was redo. I don't know for certain, but I know that there are funds available from the National Park Service for historic preservation. So now we can bring it back to you guys to discuss any further thoughts on this subject. About specifically, how do you feel about the idea? Are we ready to to make a mandatory versus voluntary sort of decision, or do we want more time to, with a consultant to go through that, or do we want to go to a consultant and have them come forward with a proposal? Do we want to spend the dollars do we want to recommend the city do that? I mean, it seems pretty, to me anyway, I'm biased, my own biased opinion is that there's a number of structures in town that are at risk. One being the elementary school. A little while ago, it was a little house we used to call the Little Red House, Nadine Richards' house, a.k.a. Nadine Spooner, which I don't know the status. Do you guys know the status of that project, by the way?
Yellow house, the red house?
The little tiny red house down at the end of the...
The Historical Society was trying to get that to relocate it by the Maritime Museum, but I don't know if that's going to work out or not.
Yeah.
But that's one of the things I know that they've been working on very hard. But that's the comment I want to make about that. Yeah.
My recommendation on this, unless you guys have comments you want to make, I'm not seeing any bright eyes at this point.
My recommendation would be that the formation of an advisory board is the most organized way to get kind of free work from interested members of the committee with a clear mechanism to then forward those recommendations up to the city council to enact. So I think that we should call for members, start that committee, call for interested members of the committee to participate, and then rely on that advisory board to prepare a recommendation on voluntary, mandatory, combination of both, where we need professional advice or things like that.
I agree with Mary on that 100%. And I would even say if the last draft was generated in November of 2020, 5 years ago this month, maybe I would think that some of those people might still be around. There might be different people. But it might be valuable to go through that process again and form a committee like Mary stated. And I would just like to add something too. There are also people who aren't retired that are currently in the workforce that could also be called upon to help with this. So,
Ron?
I completely agree. And Ms. Setting, I appreciate your email. I did some research about your ordinance because I am very historically involved in building a project right now in Morro Bay, and not too many people know about potential incentives that developers could have to preserve buildings that could benefit them financially and not really knock the building down to do something else. And I really appreciate that. And there are two and I did read about the two cities that were involved in this drafting effective historical preservation ordinance that you told us to go in, and one was the city of San Jose where I used to live, and the other one was the city of Davis. And those two cities, the only thing I would say is that Morro Bay was incorporated in 1964, and these cities were incorporated in the mid 1800s and to early 1900s. Which probably has a lot more historical value than what we have here in Morro Bay, even though we probably had all the Chumash Indians here in the 1500s. But nonetheless, I completely agree with you, Mary, as to not spend city funding to do things that maybe volunteer groups to come together to make some recommendations, because I feel like we're adding layers by forming another planning commission that says / historical to for the planning department to run is a potential another organization for this. So I hope it does it in a voluntary purposes instead of a mandatory, because I think there are some things out there that we can communicate out to developers and other people that can preserve some of these buildings, and one being the Red House. I think for $60,000, Eric, you can move it to your lot if you want.
Yeah, I have a slightly different opinion, and that's only because I'm nervous about some properties that I have impending. I've plans that I've seen for, I'm not at liberty to disclose those properties per se, but there are properties in town which will be considered historic, or would be, though they may not meet the state guidelines, that may or may not make it if we don't act relatively quickly, and the school could be one of those. It may not meet state guidelines. It might. So we could, would we be upset if we lost that building? I would. And so I tend to want to push a little harder to try to find grant funding to fund an actual professional, so that we don't have any legal problems later because we accidentally made a program that doesn't sufficiently cover all of the bases that it might have needed to, but because we didn't have a professional, we didn't use them. So I would urge, although I may be at a loss, to try to push for the city to hire a consultant, and when the consultant then gives us some options as to what the best routes could be, that with those options, we then go forward and develop the committee that you're discussing to say, how does Morrow, and with that group then go out to the public, the citizens of town, and ask the citizens what they feel is important, rather than what we feel is important. But in doing that as quickly as possible, we might protect something that will otherwise go away.
I'm interested on, so two things there. Could we in parallel look for grant funding? Because I mean, if this was not going to hit the city, if it was a grant that was going to fund this, I would be all in on hiring the consultant. And then the other question, Eric, was just like, do we have, to me, with the Ridgeway project, it did seem like we do have some existing checks and balances to have some say in the development process within the city, to make sure that we don't lose out on projects that we already know are of historical importance to Morro Bay.
Right. Okay. And I, knowing some of the Historical Society committee members, I think they, I feel comfortable if they feel that a consultant should be hired to help them make a decision. But knowing the vigorousness of what they go through to identify historical areas within the city limits, I'm confident in not wasting time and forming that committee and asking them to make that decision, if that's what they require us to do, instead of us trying to just make a decision between us in a matter of an hour or so. But I, but if that's what the committee says we should do, then that's when we should look into potentially doing that.
The only reason I hesitate on that is because the previous draft that they produced was entirely voluntary, and in some cases voluntary doesn't protect voluntary, and that's a real subjective, that's a sort of a philosophical mm-hmm. discussion. That's not, I'm not saying I'm right, I'm just saying my opinion. And somebody else's opinion is valid also. Yeah. And that's why we're here as a group, to try to decide one way or the other. Although I'm having trouble articulating exactly how this should go. I'm trying to wrap this up with everybody's thoughts, and I don't know that that's potentially possible.
Mr. Chair, could I make some comments that may assist the commission and your deliberation? So it sounds like there could be consensus or majority support for a recommendation to council to kick off the process through the creation of a new advisory board. So having just gone through this process with the Waterfront Master Plan Advisory Committee, creating a board, onboarding a new advisory board, launching a new advisory board, and most of all, staffing an advisory board is a very significant strain on the Community Development Department's resources. If we were to create a new advisory board before the Waterfront Master Plan update is complete, scheduled for completion in November 2026, we would have to ask for additional staff to do that, which I don't expect we would get. So, I mean, I understand that this is very important to the community and that there is a sense of urgency, but within our current staffing resources, I wouldn't be able to support the creation of a new advisory committee until after the waterfront master plan update is complete. And so there could be some wisdom to some of the ideas I heard to possibly, as we're finishing and working on the waterfront master plan update, looking to find some amount of budget we could use to bring an expert on board to start the historic preservation ordinance process. And then by the time we're done with the waterfront master plan update, we could build on those efforts with the creation of an advisory body.
I like it. I like that the best. I mean, I'm not certain I want to tie it. I like tying it to the waterfront master plan, but there's dollars there. Is that what I'm hearing?
In terms of the community development department's work program, mm-hmm. I would like to complete the waterfront master plan update and have the WMPAC kind of conclude its work before we create a new advisory council, because again, that takes so much resources to staff an advisory council.
But did I hear that you would be interested in pulling in an outside consultant in the interim? Is that
correct? In the interim, and of course, we will pursue any grants that are available. But I think it's more doable to be able to work with a consultant in the interim to get something started before we create a new advisory body.
Well, then, how do you feel on that? The button.
My only wish would be that if we do hire a consultant, that there is community involvement with that consultant, and it's not just an outsider that's taking a contract to consult on historical preservation. I think it's really important to get the feedback from people who have grown up here and who have been here for a long time, because they can shed light on what was here before my time, the evolution of the city, and I think that's very important when it comes to deciphering what is historically valuable to us as a community, not just someone who specializes and is a professional in that. No offense to those people.
In other jurisdictions, the way that goes is that the community or the historical society is who typically makes the list, the master list of historic resources, or the contributing list of historic resources, which is a subsidiary, lesser important group. And all the consultant is doing is just drafting the language by comparing other plans, like you were mentioning San Jose's or Davis's or other plans that might be recommended by staff, other jurisdictions that have perhaps won awards for their preservation. The consultant's not saying it's this building and that building. Mm-hmm. That's the focus of the group that comes afterwards.
Collaboration.
Yeah, and the public at large through charrettes, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I think that's... Would that be the way you see that as well, Erlen?
Yeah, absolutely. It would involve significant public involvement for sure.
Okay. So,
I am going to make a kind of a blunt comment. Instead of canceling one of our planning commission meetings, maybe we can have the Historical Society come and make a presentation with the expertise they had over the last... I mean, we're using part of their document for the last 5 years that's been on the table today and talking about it. I don't think they were that bad about making some recommendations.
We actually did that a number of years ago, and I'm sorry Joe's not here to pitch in his opinions on that.
Okay.
And we had a discussion around their suggested language, and we did not push that language forward. That's not to say we shouldn't bring them in again. I'm just saying that it has
happened.
Instead
of spending resources of our city resources I don't know. Maybe if you've done that, that's a different story, being here only on the second time at this meeting. So, but that would be my recommendation, to make this thing more feasible for the city as well as for the public to be able to make some comments. In one of our meetings instead of canceling it, have a planning commission meeting and have some kind of a presentation from them, if they want to do that. If not, maybe we move forward with what you're saying.
I just had one more, excuse me, one more question to follow with you said earlier about potentially being in danger of losing some of our historically valuable properties here in Morro Bay, possibly sooner than later. Is there anything in place currently that would protect said properties, or would there be a way for the city to implement like an emergency protection, or is that just kind of unrealistic?
I don't have the answer to that. I think staff may be better able to answer that.
So first of all, so as Derek explained in his presentation, we do have tools currently with CEQA to protect any property that is eligible for listing on the state registry. In the deliberation, there was a comment about Morro Elementary Schoolhouse. I just want to be clear that the Friends of Morro Elementary did commission an expert prepared historic resource evaluation that determined that that property is eligible for state listing.
Oh, okay.
So that has been determined. There's the CEQA terminology is, substantial evidence, an expert prepared report would be, has concluded that it's eligible for listing. So we have that that guarantee.
I was not aware of that.
There. Of course, that tool has limitations, as Eric mentioned. It may not apply to a property that doesn't meet the state, criteria. It also wouldn't apply to a property that doesn't trigger CEQA because it's just an alteration that doesn't rise to the level of required a discretionary permit and CEQA review. As far as an urgency ordinance, there is, that's like the emergency option you were referring to, Commissioner DeFazio. That's something that we could go back and discuss with the city attorney. There is always an option. I mean, for example, currently the city has an urgency ordinance in place prohibiting any future applications for battery storage facilities. There could be some potential to develop an urgency ordinance to meet some of the goals that we're talking about tonight. Of course, that wouldn't come without its controversy, right? That would still limit property values and property rights, and so that would generate some controversy for sure.
Yeah. Any further thoughts?
So how close, what would it take at this point for us to pursue what the Friends of Morro Elementary have already done legwork on?
Thanks for asking that question so I can clarify my statement. So their work has been very focused just on the Morro Elementary property. And again, they hired an expert, Robert Chattel, historic preservationist, to prepare a historic resource evaluation similar to the evaluation that Susanna mentioned was prepared for the 900 Ridgeway project and the one prepared for 416 Main Street. So it wasn't an ordinance, it was just a historic resource evaluation for that specific property.
Let me break it down just a tiny bit rather than try to compile it all at the same time. The discussion around voluntary versus mandatory, I personally am not ready to discuss that. And how do you all feel about that? I think that should be pushed down the road after a consultant or after a committee rather than now. Would you concur on that or do you disagree on that?
I am not ready to weigh in on mandatory versus voluntary at this point. I think we have a lot to look at.
Okay, so that answers that question.
No.
The second question would be, do we have any other issues around this subject that we want to discuss that aren't currently on the table? Like, I think the only thing left on the table is whether we go to form a committee and move forward with a committee versus do we hire an outside consultant and search for funding sources that might be available. That appears to be the only question that's still out there, unless I hear differently. So my own, go ahead, Mary.
Yeah, what I heard from the staff is that there isn't capacity to do another committee right now. And I think what I've heard is the main concern about, in the interim while we're waiting for that, do we miss out, do we lose any historic properties that we care about? So for me, I'm wondering if I want to just be as fiscally responsible as possible. So I think I'd be interested in what is the bare minimum that we could pay for in order to facilitate some sort of preemptive list from the historic society. That way, like, if we had a list of properties, if any permit applications were coming up from the city, then it would be something maybe that comes in front of the Planning Commission. But I'd be interested in, like, what is the bare minimum scope that we could pay in order to feel protected to not lose properties that are meaningful for the city in the interim before we form that planning, or before we form that advisory board?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think there's any teeth in anything we can do with sans an ordinance actually in place.
So anything that's over 50 years old, isn't it supposed to have some kind of a history ordinance done?
If it requires a discretionary permit. So there could be a project, say, a small addition, an alteration to a house that doesn't trigger a discretionary permit, doesn't trigger CEQA, and so we wouldn't have a mechanism to require that historic resource evaluation, even if the building were over 50 years old. I think that's one of the risks of not having a historic preservation ordinance.
Yeah, so my recommendation would be to suggest to council that they take action with a consultant, having staff find as much funding as they might be able to find somewhere. And with respect to, like, finding the lining up the buildings of which ones are historic, that'll probably be free. That's probably going to be the Historic Society for free, and that's down the road a little bit. We just need to get the initial teeth so that the city residents can kind of get into it in charrettes and in public meetings and have their say about whether they like the proposal or how to modify whatever proposal comes forward to their liking. Am I saying that right, Erlen? I don't know if I'm getting my point across. It feels like I'm not getting my point across.
That sounds correct. I understand your point. I think anything that has teeth is going to have to tackle those really difficult questions that we're going to probably want an advisory body to help guide the city through and provide that public forum on.
Maybe the best way to say it was just be, I would like to see it move forward as quickly as possible, and I would like to suggest to council to move forward as quickly as possible and maybe leave out the part about how they do it and about the dollars and cents of it and say we're not interested at this time in the mandatory versus voluntary. We would just like to see them pursue whichever opportunity they feel is most appropriate, because it doesn't sound like we have perfect agreeance on this subject right now.
Well, I think to that point, too, just a reminder that the commission's purview is really policy, land use policy advice to the city council, not so much the fiscal. So I would leave the fiscal aspect to the city council to decide on as far as the cost of a consultant.
That clarifies it a lot for me. Then I absolutely would push to do everything you can to save houses. You agree? Yeah. That gives us the Roger Ebert four thumbs up.
It's simple. I like it. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. And then with respect to the balance, I think Mary already started to make a motion that you can continue.
For the general plan?
Yeah, which we're kind of making one motion to cover all of this, because it's all under one item number.
All right. I motion to recommend a city council receive and file the general plan annual progress report, as well as consider recommendations from the Planning Commission, which include the four mentioned.
Yeah, Main Street North, pedestrian between Errol and Radcliffe, Main Street South between Olive and Shasta, the bluff height guidelines, the garage setback on steep lots, former mm-hmm. language from the previous, and the parking, three separate little parking areas for the commercial fishermen.
Mm-hmm. In addition to moving forward the historic preservation ordinance as quickly as possible.
Great, thank you. That's very clear direction.
I will second that motion.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? 4-0, 4 with Mr. Joe Ingraffia absent. Thank you. I think that kind of concludes our discussion, although Planning Commissioner comments?
Yeah, before we adjourn, I'm actually going to be out of the country for the December 4th WOMPAC meeting and was wondering if it's possible to send potentially another planning commissioner to represent the planning commission in that meeting.
So the resolution that created the WOMPAC, I don't believe it has any provisions for alternate, so I think you just would have to be absent at that meeting and not have an alternate.
Waterfront Master Plan Planning Committee. And I have a random item. The King Tide is upon us. And tomorrow at 9:21 a.m. is a King Tide, which is a 6.9 plus 6.9 feet, which is a pretty big one. And also Friday at 10 a.m. plus 6.9. It's kind of fun if you walk down to like Windy Cove by the Natural History Museum to see how high the water comes up. When I was a little kid, I used to do that every year. And in 1972, I think it was, the water actually went across the road all the way out into the golf course. It was that high. And I've been waiting for it to do that ever since, but then I realized years later that they actually repaved that road about 3 inches higher, and that's the reason it's never gone back across the road. But so King Tide tomorrow is fun in the morning. And Erlyn, do you have any other comments from staff?
I do have some director updates. So first of all, we do have the WOMPAC, Waterfront Master Plan Advisory Committee meeting, is meeting in this room, the Vets Hall, tomorrow at 3 p.m. The agenda includes a review of the 1996 Waterfront Master Plan, as well as a review of the proposed agenda for our November 18th community workshop on the Waterfront Master Plan update. Then next Tuesday, City Council will hear a couple items that affect land use. One is adoption of the 2025 Building Code update, which will go into effect on January 1st, 2026. The other is to consider community development block grant funding recommendations for the city's share of CDBG funds that we receive from the county. Then on November 18th, again, we have that workshop for the Waterfront Master Plan update. It's from 6 to 8 p.m. I have flyers in the front of the room. I encourage the audience to take a flyer, spread the word. We want to have as many members of the community participate as possible in that workshop. And then just a reminder, also January 1st, our new fees take effect. And of course, the new building code, 2025 building code, takes effect also on January 1st. And that concludes my director updates.
Okay, well, that concludes our evening.
Mr. Chair, so yeah. Susanna reminded me, I had it written down here, but I said it incorrectly. So because of Veterans Day, City Council is on Wednesday next week, the 12th.
Okay, thanks, Susanna. And thank you all. Good evening. And that concludes our meeting for the evening.